everybody. Good morning if you're on the West Coast. Good afternoon if you're on the East Coast. Welcome to Healthcare SEO, how to win first place on Google. And so that's the goal. Pretty much everybody wants to be on top of Google. Fun fact, I remember speaking to a group of about 300 practitioners a few years ago. I asked out of them, who wants to be number one? Everybody but one. And of course, he was the guy that has to argue with everything. He didn't want to be number one. But everybody else, 299 out of 300, wanted to be number one. So we'll assume, since you're taking the time to watch the webinar, you're one of the 299 that want to be have an aggressive, competitive SEO position. So my name is Stuart Gandolf. I'll do introductions in just a minute. In case you're wondering if you're in the right place, this webinar is all about SEO. We're going to cover a lot of ground. We wrote this and designed this webinar for people that have either zero experience with SEO or lots of experience with SEO. So we try to give, certainly we have some basic principles in here. I think what we find is a lot of our clients have knowledge of SEO, but they've never had it really put together for them in a package where they can understand the context and how all these things fit together. So that's what we try to do here, is provide some really good depth, but also breadth and more of a context for how this fits, particularly in the very unique world of healthcare, which is so vital to our success here. So I mentioned healthcare, really any healthcare entity this webinar is appropriate for. So we do, for example, a lot of work with multi-location, dozens or hundreds of locations, specialty practices or dental practices, addiction, hospitals, health systems, long-term care plans, pharma device, SaaS today, these days, telehealth. And then in terms of the level of people on this webinar, definitely we have some CEOs signed up that are trying to understand how this fits, how they can direct their team, how they can hire, how they can work with vendors, CMOs, and then marketing team members as well. So a pretty broad mix. Looking over, we've got a really actually terrific list of attendees here today. You're in some good company. So a pretty broad variety of people, but it's all about, okay, how do we create a winning strategy on Google? And we'll talk about that in a moment. So I, again, am Stuart Gandolf. I founded Healthcare Success back in 2006 with a partner. And a few years later after that, I bought him out. And so I'm the CEO of the company today. I've been doing this for more than 20 years, been doing this for quite some time, spoken at lots of venues and written and so forth. Grant here is a sub specialist in SEO. And so Grant, I'll go ahead and let you introduce yourself.
Yeah, hi to everyone out there. And thanks very much. And Stuart, I think that was a great overview. We have a lot to cover, and there's probably a lot more we won't have time to cover. But SEO is something I've been engaged with since before Google, trying to show up in Yahoo directories and things like that. I've been fortunate enough to speak at conferences around the world, mainly around SEO, large sites, enterprise, multi-location, some healthcare conferences as well. I was originally a VP at homes.com, so a site with 110 million pages, trying to show up in search. Had my own agency in Los Angeles, and also was at the agency of record for one of the largest addiction treatment centers in the country with over 300 locations. So I love SEO. I love the idea of healthcare SEO and how that fits into everything. And I'm really looking forward to sharing some of that knowledge with you guys today.
Very good. I did neglect at the beginning to tell you that we will be recording this. So keep part, if you won't be able to watch the whole thing, the recording will be available and you can share it with your colleagues. There will be back and forth between Grant and me. I've been doing this for so long, teaching this topic, because it's my passion. I love SEO too. So we're going to share the podium today. And we will have time for a Q&A at the end, and actually have also a little offer for those of you that make it to the end. So let's just get started. Oh, just another quick comment. Our firm, Healthcare Success, is truly integrated. SEO is a key pillar of our expertise, but we're truly integrated, traditional, digital strategy. And again, these are just some of the clients, many of whom we talked about earlier, who this conference is for. So on the SEO essentials side, Grant, want to pick up this part?
Yeah. So I often get a question, asked for me, what is SEO? And I think this is the most succinct way of explaining it. The process of earning traffic. So that means, Google doesn't just give stuff freely, but you have to earn traffic from organic or natural search results on search engines. And what we're going to go into today is how we earn it. And I think the important thing, next slide, please, is while we talk about, search traffic, we're really talking about Google, hence the name of this webinar, how to rank number one in Google. They pretty much, on a global standpoint, have the lion's share of the market for search. Now, in the US, Bing has a little bit more than this, obviously around 20% overall when you look at the numbers. But Google really is the big dog, and we want to make sure we understand how Google thinks, how Google ranks different websites, and how we can show up high in those results. And we're going to give you a little bit of insight into those results as well and how they're kind of formulated. So if you can go to the next slide, please, Stuart. So this is, for folks that obviously everyone searches on Google, but you don't always understand how they break down the search results. So there's the PPC ads, which are paid ads that generally appear at the top of the page. They can also appear at the bottom on the right rail in certain instances. Then there is the local pack. So the local pack is algorithmically inserted into a page when Google believes that the searcher's intent is around a local entity or a local business. So it's been called everything from the seven pack when there were seven locations to now the local pack. Generally, there's three or four locations and then a see more. You'll see a map show up with those different business locations on there. After that, and there's always a lot of different search elements that can appear in search results. You have generally the natural search results after that. And as you can see here, PPC ads are generally at the foot of the page. And then search is related to, which is a really good source of understanding what Google believes the actual search query was about. So generally those are related and generally a close match to that original query. Next page, please. You can also see on mobile, obviously there's less real estate, but there's much more focus on local results because generally, local intent is driven by mobile devices. So we're always thinking about that. How do you shop on mobile? There's generally less of a snippet, so less of that blue area that shows up. And sometimes, as you can see here, more of a description of that particular site. Google really has focused on mobile first as being a key to searcher intent over the last 10 years, really. And so we are obviously always thinking about, especially for our location-based businesses. Next slide, please. There's some other elements that also fit into a page. So there are people also ask, which is, where people are asking questions. These are not actually real people's questions. They're algorithmically produced by Google where they think this is what people might be asking for. And it's really also interesting to tie that into how people are thinking and the kind of intent they have. And there's also a featured snippet. I come to this last because I remember doing a conference presentation about 4 years ago in the UK that really was talking about how to get position zero or this featured snippet. Now it is a lot more difficult because a lot of people understand how to get it, but it really is about featuring something that is succinct and likely to answer the query that users are asking. So we really try and look at optimizing pages for that featured snippet as well. You do get clicks through, as you can see there's citations there. And I also know that probably some of you have seen the recent updates from Google around a different results layout. They're still going to have citations that go back to the original site. So SEO isn't going anywhere. So we look at this as being the key and core functions of that page. There's not just this on the site as well. Next page, please. The results also show up what we call knowledge panels. Now, knowledge panels can be about specific entities. So entities are people, places, things, concepts. So knowledge panels are triggered when Google believes that there is an entity like a business, or there's a particular topic, like in this case, a condition, where they can answer something within the search results from their knowledge graph. A knowledge graph is a particular, like an encyclopedia, where each thing has a specific entry, and it's known, it's unique. And so when those two criteria come together, Google generally presents a knowledge graph. And your business should be unique based on the address, based on your specialty. And same thing with the conditions in medical field, treatments and things like that. They generally trigger a knowledge panel. Next one, please. So all these different things, you know, and over the last 15 years, the actual search results have got really busy with lots of these different featured elements that come and go within in the actual search results or the SERPs. So where you show really does matter. So from an organic standpoint and local pack standpoint, you know, the higher up you show, obviously the more clicks you're likely to get. And so this is on the left-hand side is how many clicks or the percentage of clicks you get. On the lower portion is the position that you're in. Obviously, there's a big difference between being in position one and position two. And once again, the trailing off until you're in position 10 to 20. So we really try and make sure our clients and websites, and you guys should make sure you check and make sure your websites are showing up in those top 3 to 5 positions. All right. I'm going to hand it back to Stuart.
Yep. Thank you, Grant. Very good overview. So one of the something that's been created for a number of years, and we'll talk about that in a moment, is the idea of this SEO periodic table of elements. Excuse me. So this is broken down because when people talk about SEO, I find that unless they really understand this topic, they focus on, for example, the technical side of it, or they've heard about the technical and it's all just computer stuff. And they'll hand off SEO to IT. IT is going to solve our, you know, showing up on Google problems. And it's a lot more complex than that. Google, of course, has an algorithm that they will not share with the public. Even if they did, they change this all the time anyway. But it has probably hundreds of variables that it counts. But this is broken down. This is a way of saying from search engine land, Danny Sullivan came up with this concept years ago to how do we make this digestible? It's really hard to respond to hundreds of algorithm guesses. How do we categorize it in a way that we can understand what really are the levers to pull? So this is a fun fact. You can look it up. It's the SEO periodic table. But to go through this, I'm going to cover this just for a few moments, and then we'll cover this throughout the presentation. Grant here, actually, going back to 2000.
No, it's funny. In 2014 in London, I was actually on stage with Danny Sullivan. So you mentioned, he now works for Google. But the periodic table has been around for a long time. It is a living document. It evolves as SEO evolves, and it's really pulled from search engine land's best practice, as well as polling some of the top SEOs in the world as far as factors and how weighted they might be. And I've been fortunate enough to be part of that panel a few times. So,
right. So there's some names that keep coming up in search a lot. Danny Sullivan's one. Matt Cutts, these are people that are the sort of Google, the head Googlers on the SEO side. So in any event, breaking this down a little bit further, and again, we're going to go into more detail here, but if you're looking at some of the major groups of factors within the Google algorithm, the first one to consider is content. And we're going to talk a lot about content today. And Google cares a whole bunch about the quality of the content. Is it well-researched? Does it answer questions people have? How deep is it? And what are the keywords? Do the keywords match what's in the content? Is that natural? Google's looking for natural results that are intuitive and written for the user, not trying to game them, not trying to play them. Is it fresh? So for example, we have thousands of blogs with our own company. We practice what we preach. I didn't mention this in the opening. Many of our clients, probably half, find us organically on Google. Since the day I started the company, we wanted to be, you know, number one on Google and have been for many years. And so the point there is, even with blog posts that we wrote 5 years ago, we'll go back and freshen them. Google loves that. And look at sites, or if a blog post drops a couple points on the scale for readership, we'll go back and freshen it up. So we want to think about freshness. Is there multimedia involved? Architecture, meaning things like site speed. Is the site secure? Is there duplicate content? How is it structured? How are the URLs built? That's all part of this. Again, we'll be covering a lot of these issues in more detail in a few minutes. The HTML side, we'll be talking a little bit about schema, tags, description tags, title tags, H1s, H2s, headline tags. The reputation of the website, is it a good website or is it kind of a sleazy category? And we'll talk again, yet more about that. Are there links to the website? What's the user experience? And then what do you are, we're not talking about this much today, but are you trying to game Google? So these are called toxins. Are you trying to do things like cloaking or putting in fake content or keyword stuffing or hiding the keywords or any one of millions of games they play? So these are some of the key factors. So it's not a technical issue. It's not a content issue. It's all of these things. And it has to be all thought through strategically. And it's a moving time. Let's see, the Grant, you're going to cover, or I'll cover this if you like.
I can cover this.
Go ahead.
Yeah, so obviously nothing is static when it comes to Google. These are some of the major updates that happen. Google says there's, you know, hundreds of updates a year, but there's some pretty major ones. You know, Panda was primarily against content, thin content. By thin, we mean content that doesn't have much value. And I want to underscore what Stuart said. When we're talking about healthcare, content is king, but content can be, you know, life-saving. And so Google has a much higher tolerance for quality when it comes to what you call your money or your life queries. And we'll talk about that a little bit later, where there is a financial or health or some other quotient of it. So Panda, from a thin content standpoint, it's now rolled into the major algorithm updates. And so we have to make sure our quality of content for healthcare related issues is very high. And we have in-house writers that do a lot of that stuff, but we also interview our doctors, our clients, to make sure that we have great content, deep content, valuable content. Penguin was another one. I'm just going to go through this really quickly, that focused on link quality. Because it was really easy back in the day, Google was built on links as being votes for a site. So it was very easy to gain by sending more links to a site. So as we go through these updates, what we see is Google is focusing more on quality, on known entities, so elements that they understand, all the way through to better understanding of healthcare-related issues, better understand the quality of healthcare content, and better understanding what users are actually searching for so they can provide better results. And next slide, please. And once again, I talked a lot about this in 2013. It's not new, but when Google starts to introduce these new major, what are called core updates, we really have to watch as SEOs. It's not an excuse to say you've dropped because of that core update. You've dropped because you have followed some bad practices prior to that. Next slide, please. And that's really the key thing. Following best practices is the best defense against any Google update. And they publish some guidelines. There's a quality raters guideline that's published that we can share after this call. But really what their real humans are looking for when they look at a site to assess whether a site is good, bad, or ugly. So when we look at these as SEOs, you know, we're not going to pretend we're absolute total subject matter experts on everything medical. We're not doctors. We have a lot of, institutional knowledge around medicine, medical practices. But what most of the things we SEOs do is looking at competitors, competitive analysis, content gap analysis. What are our competitors doing that we're not? What is Google seeing as being a gap in particular content structure? Site performance, you know, are we delivering the best experience? And opportunity analysis, you know, obviously we want to know how can we get to number one? How can we beat your competition? So these two main components are content quality and content delivery. They're the primary differentiators in almost every site we look at, almost every client we bring on board. Either their quality of content is below par, it doesn't cover all the topics completely, or how they're delivering it, it's really hard to find the best content, or their best content is hidden from search engines, or it's really slow, so it's not a great experience. Next slide, please. All right, you want to talk about content quality?
Sure, I guess the key here is that, you know, we talked about going back to the periodic table, Google is just fanatical about content and the idea that it's relevant and useful. Their entire multi-billion-dollar franchise relies on users going to Google first and trusting Google. And so that's what this is all about. So when we think about content then, just like it says here on the bullets, you know, we want to answer relevant questions. We want to have better content and a better experience than our users do. We want to make sure that we are pruning out the low value content. And then we're going to talk about this idea of, you know, Grant mentioned a minute ago, your money or your life. Healthcare truly is a special category. Misinformation about how to play solitaire is not a big deal. If somebody loses the game, oh well. Misinformation about healthcare is a big deal. People die, right? So, and there's a lot of misinformation out there. And so Google takes special attention to, all right, how do we evaluate? How do we reward the sites that have, that show they have experience, expertise, authority, and trust? Now you can imagine this is really difficult when you have a brand new website. You have zero experience, expertise, authority, and trust when you start. Even if, you know, the Mayo Clinic starts a new website, they have a lot of all those things, but they haven't proven it with a brand new URL. So we are looking at, and there's lots of strategies to build this, but these are all important parts, but it all starts with quality. Grant, go ahead.
And as far as content delivery, this is where it gets a little bit more technical generally. And like Stuart said, it's not one or the other, but Google has to be able to pull your site, understand your site. And so we look at trying to make sure that we build out at least imperfect user experience. That means the fastest we can. We often get questions asked, how fast should our site be? Well, the answer is, how fast can you make it? Because you want to make sure for users, it's a great experience. And by the same token, we also talk about minimal distractions. So one of the elements around user experience, one of the elements that Google's looking for is, are there distractions on the page like ads or excessive internal links or things like that? We want to make sure that it's really focused, that users have a great experience. And that's structured for information discovery means, are there links to deeper topics? You know, are we just linking everywhere? And we see this a lot where we inherit a site and we take a look, and one page that really is key on a particular treatment has 20 different links to various areas of the site, where all it needs to do is probably have a call to action and maybe one link to an outside reference or something like that. We want to make sure that we're structuring a site for information discovery, and we want to mark it up. So make sure that search engines can understand by using context, and we're going to talk a little bit about schema, but using context within the page, within the page code, so that search engines really understand and are completely unambiguous in what the page is about. Next slide, please. All right, so there's three types of SEO that we're going to cover today. On page, obviously, things are on page. Off page, things are off the site. And local SEO, which is its own category for very good reasons. Stuart.
Sure. So on the on-page side, we talked a little bit about content before, and I just want to reiterate that the Google is fanatical. I've been to the Google complex in Mountain View multiple times, as well as in New York, and it's part of their religion, really. Grant, haven't you found that? it's a big deal. Relevant content and relevancy to the user. And so, you know, when we look at content, what does that mean? What is the, you know, content is thrown around a lot. So the idea of a page, pages are oftentimes services or facts about the, you know, if you're pharmaceutical, about the product, or facts about the, or if you're a provider, about the providers, or about the services you provide, or about the conditions you treat. It's all the pages are, those are typically pages. Blog posts are essentially sort of equivalent to newsletters and articles. And so the combination of pages and posts are a big forms of content on a page. But there's also ebooks or white papers or webinars, video, podcasts, infographics. You can see tools, case studies, all these things can give content. And a lot of these things can be designed with SEO in mind. So for example, many times we start thinking in beyond the scope of today's meeting, but you know, thinking about an infographic could be used in multiple instances. It could be used for part of the SEO. It could be shared on social media. It could be pushed with paid social media. There's many times we're looking to leverage content. And again, it all comes down to quality. Like for our company, our philosophy is all about really, really having strong content. One thing that we're not going to talk about much today, but we will in subsequent webinars, is ChatGPT. Many of you have heard about this idea of automated content. or you know, using link for or blog farms where they create lots and lots of low quality content. So our philosophy on this is, first of all, in healthcare in particular, it has to be quality. So if you want to use, for example, ChatGPT as a place to start for ideation, great, knock yourself out. And Google's come out, by the way, very interestingly recently, and said that they care about the quality more than they care about the source. So it's we SEO fans, devotees, were a little surprised at that because we just assumed Google would say it's evil. But they didn't really come out and say it's evil. They just said, at the end of the day, it's all about quality content. So I just want to reiterate that this idea of scamming Google and coming out and just like, you know, suddenly creating 50 blog posts in 50 minutes using ChatGPT, that is really likely to hurt you. And granted, I don't know if you have anything else to say about quality on this, because it's such a hot topic today.
I think the key thing is we often see, so you have a conditions or a treatment page, and we just see a wall of text. Now, that might be quality, but quality is about answering the user query. And so sometimes a graphic or a table or something that's additive to the actual page can be much better. And you know, we are not surprised when we see that wall of text that's explaining a really complex procedure to a user that wants to understand it simply. And adding a graphic in there adds to the quality component, the quality quotient of that page. So it's not just about text. It's about all these different elements and in every element that's on a page.
Yeah, this is such a deep topic. As we're just going through this, one of the key things that our team thinks about, and we recommend your team thinks about if you have one, is, you know, you're not just writing for you're writing for, in most cases, Google, one, two, the patient, three, other providers, four, it could be donors or other stakeholders, five, it could be employees. Your writing needs to write for many different kinds of audiences. It could be for different levels if you're on a B2B side, which we work a lot of B2B as well. It could be for, you know, the executives, the doers, like who are you writing for? And then how does this all fit together? And so the content part is vital. And a fun fact, when people ask us to do websites, you know, the content is often at least half the price, right? Because it's like, there's all the design, there's all the development, the content is huge. That's the hugely labor intensive part. So when you create good content, what we're really looking for is building authority. And one of the fun facts is when you're searching companies by name, when you get these kinds of listings where you have citations about them, not on the paid side, but on the organic side, this is telling you that you have an authority site. Google is saying when it gives multiple links for a given entity, it's just one little signal. It's not an official thing, but you'll notice the more authoritative sites will have multiple links when you search them by name. And that's really the goal, is to build authority. Grant, you want to talk about some delivery?
Yeah. I want to tie that back to what we talked about already. So great quality, you know, if great quality content falls in a forest and no one's around, does it make a sound? Does it rank on Google? The answer is no. You've got to make sure the technical side is taken care of. And you know, I would suggest everyone looks at their site as a user. It's the first thing I say. You know, if you get kind of a little bit annoyed because you can't get to your content quick enough, your users are probably thinking the same thing. Eating your own dog food is really important. But you know, once Google can find your content and has a great experience, a great experience on the page, i.e. the speed is great, the page loads correctly, there's no layout shifts as the page loads, you know, so it's a great experience like that, then it can start to look at what's in the page. So we also talk about title tags and description tags. You hear a lot of SEO about those things. If you imagine that Google is a massive library, and it wants to present the most relevant titles of books, you can understand that importance of a title tag. It really should say exactly what that page is about. It doesn't have to ramble. It doesn't have to go into too much detail. It should really just be succinct, like the title of a book. And we often see that title is massively long or too short, so it doesn't give enough context. A great example is if you're a dermatologist and you have an office in New York, then obviously your title tag is going to say something like dermatologist in New York. It can't just say dermatologist. And so those kind of details are really important for a subspecialty or things like that to make sure the title tag explains it. And the reason I spend so much time on that, it's one of the biggest levers that you can pull that helps both search engines and users click through to your site better. The description tag shows up in the search results as well. It's in code, you don't see it on the page, but it's also important for click-through rate from the search results to make sure your description tag is really clear, concise, and relevant to tell people what's going to be on that page. Most of the other things here are really important to search engines, really important to users. Mobile freshness, that's just talking about how fresh is your content, how fresh is the mobile experience. Alt tags for images, that's obviously an accessibility thing that's really important for healthcare sites and sites that are outside of the US. Certainly in California, there's accessibility requirements. So you want to make sure that things like alt tags for images and other in-content elements to make sure screen readers can understand the page is important. And Google looks at these, you know, they're not massive factors, but they're small factors to make sure a page shows up. Semantic markup, just making sure your page is structured, just like a book again. You kind of scan a page having headers so you can stop, read, and understand. It's really important from a structured standpoint for Google to understand the page better. Most of these other things are around how you get around the site. So are there internal links to the proper pages from connected pages? Is the anchor text descriptive? So someone and you and Google knows what you're going to click through to when you click through. So it doesn't mean you just put anchor text that isn't relevant to the target page. You want to make sure it's relevant. The structure, the organization, these are really, really key. Information architecture is a whole webinar by itself, but you've got to make sure that it's really easy for users and search engines to understand how your site is structured. XML sitemap helps with discovery. It's a file that lives on your server. And then the last few things are really around, does Google understand and does Google trust your site? HSTS is just a fancy way of saying, is your site secure? Tenure and reputation is, have your URLs been around a long time? Has the content gained and garnered a lot of links? And schema, we have another slide on that, I think, but schema is really about in code with disambiguation as the key. If I say river bank, that's really clear. If I say financial bank, it's really clear. But if I just have the word bank on the page, I want to make sure Google has the context of what kind of bank I'm talking about. And there's a lot of medical terms that have the same ambiguation problems. Next slide, please. So we talked about the schema. So schema, if you go to schema.org, you will be presented with a lot of information that no one below your CTO is going to understand. It's really just about structuring data so that Google understands what a name is, what an address is, what a concept on a page is, people, places, things. These are all known entities that we want to make sure Google understands. Schema markup is complex, relatively easy to get right, really easy to get wrong. We see that a lot, and it's often something where you're sending the wrong information back to Google, and it's really tough to make sure Google understands your page correctly. So I will be open for lots of questions after this, because this is a webinar to itself. But schema is important to get it right. There's local business schema. There's medical business schema. There's physician type schema. There's treatment type schema. There's lots of different schema that ties into a medical organization. We want to make sure it's adequately represented within your site. We've got a few more slides here. Design mobile first. We know this. It's all about content delivery. Is the mobile experience great? Are you having large images or videos that aren't optimized, for a mobile phone or mobile experience? We see a lot now, different screens. We see in cars, we see, tablets. We see a lot of different opportunities to represent your site. You want to make sure it presents well on every single screen. So we test and make sure that works. Speed is always important from a user standpoint. It was proven by Amazon with a large study that an additional second of site speed to have the site load, so slower by 1 second, was about a 10 or 15% reduction in conversion rates. Imagine what that can do to your medical practice when someone has to wait around to fill out a particular form. We want to make sure the site is fast, the experience is seamless and as fast as feasible. We mentioned accelerated mobile pages there. It's an initiative by Google just to speed up the web a little bit. And Google gives you tools to understand how fast your site is. There's a few different tools. This is web.dev, which is a Google site, that just assesses both the SEO, best practice, accessibility, or performance. I believe this was a client site when we took them on board. Is that right, Stuart?
Yep.
Yeah. So performance of 11 out of 100 is not ideal. The details down the bottom. Yeah. In any sphere, that's not good. And the elements down the bottom are part of what Google calls core web vitals. They report on that. They've said it's an important factor, especially for tiebreakers when two sites are very similar from a quality standpoint. Sites generally with better core web vitals, better speed, better experience are going to outrank their competitors. Next slide, please.
All right. So I'll take this one, a quickie. Thank you, Grant. That was awesome. And there's, like Grant said, each of these topics can be full webinars, and we're trying to move very quickly. We're already at about 38 minutes and into a webinar. So recognize that we're not trying to teach you everything we know. We're just trying to give you the context for how this all fits together. So the one thing that's really critical, and this is a fun fact, Google, the billions and billions and billions of dollars with Google initiated with one key idea. And I actually read this book. That's how much of a SEO nerd I am. This book is about the founding of Google. And the main insight was that they noticed, Sergey Brin and Larry Page noticed and understood that the most important research papers out there were cited later by others. And if they were cited later by other professors or other scientists and lots of other noted people, then that must be an important page because it's being cited by others. So that was the idea of a backlink. And that's one of the key factors of how Google became Google, was the idea that if you have more links, you must be more important. So in those very early days, it was mostly or often largely about the number of links, the quantity. But the quantity today, people gained it within about 30 seconds. And so it's not just about quantity, but quality. So for example, a link from the New York Times or I don't know, ESPN or whatever is good. A link from, you know, a Tibetan bed and breakfast, not so good. Or from a porn site, much worse. So getting links, quality links to your site, respected links, especially again in healthcare, is important. And there's this again is yet another whole webinar of how do you earn links, how do you get them, how do you find better people, but it really comes down to getting relevant quality links. Google's answer is, well, just write good stuff and people will find you. Yeah, you can also write to Santa. I mean, we do that a lot, but there are strategies you can do, especially in the later stages of an SEO program, to help build the link quantity and quality. And, you know, one of the things that Grant reminded me of the other day of the reasonable surfer model, which is Google there is saying, okay, what would a reasonable surfer do to follow this link? That's why the anchor text or the text that's over the link when you're clicking from website to the other is so important. And Grant, we're kind of accelerating a little bit here because we have so much to cover, but here would be local. Do you want to talk about local for a few minutes?
Yeah, just as every link is not created equal, every business is not created equal either, but we should try and make sure the business shows up in the best light possible. Just as if you put signage outside your business to say, here I am, we want to make sure you represent really well on Google. That fact at the top is pretty amazing. Near me phrase searches are up 85%. That's 85% over a really large base. So it's not like it's 85% over two searches. There's a lot of, you know, physicians near me or dialysis near me and things like that. We just did some research for a client that showed that increased by about 30% over the course of 4 months. That's really important knowledge to have. And that near me is driven by a separate algorithm that understands where a user is actually searching from. It understands the local businesses and kind of the distance they are from that business. And it understands a lot about that business if you've filled out your Google business profile correctly. So Google Business Profile, it's free. Every business should have one. It has a name, address, phone number. A category is really key to make sure you target the right category. But it's really important to make sure you keep that fresh as well with fresh, you know, posts, images. People want to see what's happening inside your practice. And so making sure the imagery inside that is fresh, high quality is really important. There's also a matter of local citations. You can see here, CI. Local citations are really local directories. And it's everything from, you know, MapQuest, which probably some of you older guys remember as a go-to mapping app, to Apple Maps and Bing Maps and Yext and Yelp and things like that. Really big citations are really important from everyone. And those citations have to be consistent. Name, address, phone number, locations, everything should be consistent. It's often something we also see, which is this inconsistency where maybe your mailing address is very slightly different from the address you put on Google My Business. That certainly affects the reputation and it certainly affects the proximity searches. So we want to make sure all that is correct. I put down the bottom there, experience, expertise, authority, and trust, EAT. This is kind of very much to do with the medical practice, addiction clinics, facilities, residential facilities, and things like this. We want to make sure this is really exact from a Google My Business standpoint, because the Google Business Profile is such a great indicator of those trust signals that it's normally the first place we look if there's any kind of mismatch or you're not showing up above a competitor in that local pack. We want to make sure that this is really set in so you can show up in that local pack higher than your competitors. Next slide, please. So this is a tool that we have actually within the site. You can do a local test. I think you have a story around this, Stuart.
Oh, no, this is really common, this particular one. We did a webinar about an SEO 101 webinar just before the pandemic or just beginning of the pandemic. So for fun, I just went back to the same location to see how they were ranking. It's pretty much the same. So this tool just basically essentially says how consistent are your locations showing up across things like Bing or Facebook or Yelp or City Search, because again, Google is trying to figure out what's the source of truth out there. And when you have listings where that are with different names, even slight different names, Dr. Joe Wang versus Dr. Wang MD, Google doesn't understand that. It needs to be consistent across the web. And so for local, we don't want to confuse Google. Confuse Google is not a happy Google. We've talked on, if it's okay, Grant, I'm just going to take it up from here. Sure. The reviews are also really important. It's part of not just from an SEO standpoint, but from a standpoint of having a, people are actually going to buy something, right? So today, because the map pack is so prominent, the reviews on Google are especially important, right? Because people are going straight, they're searching for someone near me. Those reviews are really vital. And so you want to make sure that you have, in most cases, businesses we work with are larger, so they have, dozens, hundreds of locations or whatever. It's hard with one location to keep this control across 50 directories. It's really hard when you have hundreds of locations across 50 directories. So you want to make sure you have software and systems in place to make sure you're monitoring reviews in real time. You're able to generate reviews. You're able to respond to reviews and to scale this. It's all about scale. Yet another whole seminar we can talk about, but review management is a key area and directly and indirectly impacts SEO. So on the multi-location, I guess, Grant, you're an expert on the sort of enterprise level. Do you want to talk about this?
No worries. So for folks out there that have multi-location businesses, it obviously is more complex. We say we have one site, but we have 30 locations. So essentially you have 30 sites. You have 30 opportunities showing up to 30 different users based on their location. So when we dig in, and you should be doing this, is looking at competitors for each and every location. So the local pack is really obviously a great resource to look at. But also we're looking at other folks within the search results and the organic search results and in paid results that are showing up for those local queries. So that in itself is a bigger challenge. Where do you focus? So the 80-20 rule generally works, which is focus on the the 20% of your business that are driving 80% of your business. We start there because there's lots of learnings that we had to help us scale. And that's always the case that we see. The biggest challenge with is someone tries one size fits all, but you might find that half of your locations need one strategy, 10% your location need another strategy. So we want to make sure that we're really focusing the right strategy for the right locations based on the competitive set that you're going up against. We talk here about also the reputation management and online listings. So we've covered that, but that's even more important in multi-location to make sure they're all correct, because one will affect the rest of the site. A lack of reputation in one area can bleed into other areas as well. The proof of marketing attribution. Also, another problem is we're looking at the whole site and we don't see this one location here that's really important to you that's not doing well at all. So we're looking overall around, how is that area doing? Has it got an effect on a billboard that went up, or local advertising or radio spot, or is it buried in the site in some other way? So we want to make sure that all the different marketing channels we can assess to contribute how that affects your organic traffic, organic visibility, and obviously conversions. And critically important to create Scout Solutions. I just talked about that. Scout Solutions does not mean one size fits all. Scout Solutions means understanding everything is different and then making sure you can group things that might be the most similar together to be able to scale. So it's not just someone that has five locations, though it's important, but someone that has 50 or 100 locations, it's really important to make sure you have a separate strategy, but a strategy that you can scale effectively. Next slide, please. And then part of that is looking at the site architecture as well at scale. So we also see that more often not locations might be in the main navigation, but then are buried throughout the site. We're going to make sure that everything can be found. Content silos are about building out topical authority in one particular place, a key page, a pillar page, and then supporting content. Pillars and clusters follow the same kind of idea. You might have heard of hub and spoke, but it's really about one main meaty piece of content that then, if you want to dive a little bit deeper into a particular topic, a subtopic, then you'll link off to that particular page. But making sure the internal link structure is really clear for users and search engines so they can find their way back to the main page. Sitemaps and hierarchies, all this is generally stuff that we fix when we find a site, because generally it's not organized correctly in that information architecture. Stuart, we have to do another webinar about that. navigation duplicate content also challenges when you get larger sites that you tend to exacerbate the problem of content that's very similar. So when you start creating a scale, the people also ask and FAQs, answering the right questions on the right pages, not having one FAQ for the whole site, but really trying to dig in and making sure facts, frequently asked questions, and people also ask are tied together. So you're answering the question on the correct page for the user. That duplicate content is an issue. Yes, Stuart?
Yep. So this is an example. Some of the things we're talking about today, Grant and I are sort of secretly giggling at all the things we see that are pretty much like the dirty dozen. That's another webinar, the 12 things we see that are screwed up on most sites that we see. So, one of the things that, like, for example, earlier Grant referred to title tags. And when people ask me to review a site and to audit it for SEO, if I don't see, like, the first thing I look at is their title tags. If they don't have title tags, it's all the same title, I'm like, fail. There's nothing else you can do. If you don't have those basics done, it's like a surgeon not scrubbing out before surgery. There's nothing, it doesn't matter what you do after that. So this is another one, another common mistake that we see is duplicate content. This was somebody I worked with years ago that, and they're still doing some of the same stuff, I'm sure, but this is a fun fact that they were paying for SEO, but it turned out they were putting the same blog post on 50 different websites, and that's duplicate content. And that's, Google views that as plagiarism. So not only is it doesn't help you, it actually hurts you. So I'm gonna take us to the end here and just cover some major points, and then Grant and I will be available for some Q&A in the last 10 minutes or so. So some things I want you to think about is really, SEO is a marathon, not a sprint. Sometimes we hit a home run and a grand slam off the first pitch. That's not going to happen very often. So you shouldn't expect it. We have to recognize that it's a marathon. You really, to mix metaphors, it's a long-term building. When does SEO end? Well, I don't know. I started the company in 2006 and I meet about SEO for our website every week. It never ends. If you want to win, and you don't have to do all this stuff only if you just want to be on top of Google. Otherwise, it doesn't matter. But if you really want to be a winner, it's a long-term investment that you need to continually invest in and build leadership. And think about it. If you are a leading pharma company or device company, do you want to be perceived as the leader in your category? If you're a provider, do you want to be the leader? It's not just in your professionals, but to Google. And there are millions of variables here. One thing that Grant, when we were building this slide, suggested is to remind people that it's not a quick fix, but there are quick fixes. In other words, when we work with a client, oftentimes, you know, there's, you know, out of what, I don't know, Grant, hundreds of tasks we want to do once we take on a new client, we'll figure out those ones that are both high impact and relatively easy lifts, not just low hanging fruit, but low hanging fruit that'll give a big, big boost to the website. So there won't be hundreds of those, but we will be focusing and recommend that you focus on the things that make a difference early on. As you're thinking about SEO, you know, just make sure that you're thinking about whether it's you're looking at us or somebody else. And some of the things we recommend people consider is, do they have experience in your vertical? And that's really critical because healthcare is a whole nother animal. And, you know, multi-location providers is a little different animal within that. So thinking through of, you know, do they really understand your vertical? Do they understand and can they handle enterprise level sites? Like, you know, you can run out of things to do with three pages on a website, but if there's hundreds or thousands, it gets complex very, very quickly. Even dozens can, you know, you start thinking about the future. Can you actually talk to the people who are doing the work, or do you just have sort of the yes men that you're speaking with? Do they have the deep expertise and technical? Do they have content, and do they have strong content, and do they have writers that are experts writing it, or are they using blog farms? Many times they're secretly using blog farms to write the content that they're reselling to you. Do they help with the programming? Can they integrate with your technology? Those last two bullet points are really hard and important for you to consider. Hard to find well and important for you to consider. Is the price too good to be true? Are they advocating black hat strategies that they are run? In other words, trying to fool Google with some special trick? And you know, what's the reputation? So we're gonna do the Q&A in just a moment here, but so if you're interested in us from our standpoint and having us work with you, I invite you to ask us for a free SEO checkup. What I will do is send it to this email address. I'll forward it to my team. One of our team members will review your site, take a quick look at it, see if this seems like a good fit, and set up a time to talk with you. It won't be a full audit this way, but this is a good way. They can oftentimes spot some of the low-hanging fruit and some of the things that we would change immediately. And if you have a nagging feeling like, is everything we're doing wrong? They'll be able to tell you that. And sadly, still, Grant, I would say about half the sites we look at are pretty much dead on arrival, even if they're big sites and they paid for SEO. So there's a lot of mistakes to be made. And anyway, so that's available to you. So Q&A, let's take a look and see what we have for Q&A.
I think I answered some of them already.
Yep. So, we've already been answering questions along the way.
multitasking.
All right. So, great. Well, that's great. That's awesome. So while we're waiting for, if anybody else has some questions, we'll answer them. And if not, we'll go ahead and close. I would like to go back to, since we didn't cover ChatGPT in depth, that is such a hot topic for SEO and content. So Grant, I'd love to get any additional feedback you have on that.
So I think there's a couple of things for those that aren't aware of how that works exactly. It's obviously a large language model that essentially you type a question in conversationally, you type a question and it understands what you type and it gives you a response back. And that response can vary in quality. Generally, it's really good foundational response in a conversational way. And so it's really good for repetitive or simple tasks that you might do, like, you know, write me a title tag specifically about this page or topic. The challenge is, it's like anything, garbage in, garbage out. So if you are not putting in a prompt, as it's called, you know, a request that is really detailed, you're generally going to get a generic response out that everyone else will have as well. So in the effort of getting unique, you need to have a better expertise at building a prompt that's going to give you a better output.
Yeah, I would say it's kind of like, if you don't know what you're doing, it's kind of like giving a gun to a baby. Probably not a good idea, right? It's yeah. still a functioning tool, but it's probably not a good idea. You can make a mistake pretty quickly. The next question we have, I think, which is great, I'd love you to answer these and I can add color commentary. Sure. I have a specific discussion on this one too, but how does Google crack down on black hat SEO?
Sure. So the first thing is, the most obvious thing is, it doesn't see everything on the web every minute of the day in every corner of the world. So some people can get away with some black hat SEO. Now, black hat SEO is against Google guidelines, you know, hiding content on a page, link spamming, things like that. So has it cracked down? It can go as far as completely removing the site from the index, so you cannot be found. So that's how Google can crack down as far as the extreme. It has to find your site. It has to understand that your site is black hat. It has to have a report that goes in. So they can crack down by discovering bad links. Bad links now they mostly ignore. So there's no value in building out copious amount of links. If it's egregious, like I said, they'll just de-index your site if it's really bad. For most things around black hat content, like keyword stuffing and things like that, they just won't rank the page. So you might still end up showing up on page 25 of the Google search results. And they say, you know, where do websites go to die? It's page 2 of Google or page 1 of Bing. Yep. So hopefully that answers your question as far as black hat SEO and how Google will crack down.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll give another couple examples. It turns out that, you know, the algorithms are set up to catch the black hat stuff, and the stuff, nothing lasts very long. And most of the things people talk about is new, have been around for a decade or more for the black hat stuff. But so the algorithm catches a lot of the black hat and it can penalize at varying degrees. But there's also humans, and it's fun. One of the conferences I went to years ago, probably was PubCon, Google was there and someone was talking about some black hat from the audience about, like, you know, how proud they were of their black hat. And then the guy from Google on the podium said, really? Well, duly noted. So they actually, you know, they'll report it. Humans will report it. JCPenney was one of the most egregious failures a few years ago. They had a bunch of black hat. They didn't understand what they were paying for. They were delisted during the Christmas season. You can look that one up. So there's been some pretty bad examples out there. And then interesting, there's even negative SEO. We had this at one point where people were sending a lot of bad links to our site. We didn't know who they were. We figured it out eventually. And then Google came out with something called the disavow tool. And I knew I was a nerd when I jumped in the air with the disavow tool so we could disavow those bad links when Matt Cutts was announcing that. So at any rate, this is we don't see it every day, but it does happen, and it's something that you definitely want to avoid. Let's take a look at the next question. Brandon, have you read ahead of me on this one?
I'm actually answering the video question. So essentially we create patient education videos with our provider, okay to place these in multiple locations on the web, or is that perceived by Google as duplicate content? So duplicate content isn't a penalty, but only one piece of content is likely to show up. So if you're using these to drive traffic back to your site, you know, that's one thing, but you're not likely to have multiple of the same videos show up in search results. So it does help with page engagement. I answered another question. It does help with page engagement to have video on a page, but it won't generate more traffic by having multiple videos pushed out there if it's the same video just in different venues on the web. It can help with traffic, and traffic is great, you know, direct click-throughs from where that video is hosted. So it's great for marketing. It's not necessarily a bad thing for SEO and not necessarily a bonus for SEO.
So while Grant is going to respond to the next one too, because it's a similar topic, for those of you that are wondering, we are sharing the slides and the recording after the webinar. That'll be provided to you. Another question that just came up before I turn this back over to Grant is, how familiar are you with behavioral health? Very, very, very. We do lots with behavioral health and addiction. Grant, you know, we talked about the next question is similar. If you could read through that real quick while I'm talking.
Sure. It's about plagiarism. You know, we have a partnership with a local family magazine supplying blog posts. We also put on our own site. If they list the blog post, exact same content with our author, will it be considered plagiarism? Do we need to supply them the summary instead of the full blog post? So, plagiarism, different kettle of fish. You know, Google looks for uniqueness of content, so plagiarism in its truest sense. What it is trying to find the source of truth. So who is the authority? So generally what we recommend is if you publish it on your website first and then syndicate it out a few days or a week later to that magazine or to external partners, you will be seen as the authority. There's also a matter of adding in a canonical tag to the actual page content. That canonical tag can reference your site, say the original blog post. And so Google will assign the value from that partner website for that particular article back to the original article. So the idea of a canonical is it's the single point of truth, for want of a better term. And so, yes, but I would always publish first on your site and then syndicate later to any of the partners you want. It won't be considered duplicate content or plagiarism, but if you are the single source of truth, that's great. And I'm assuming that those articles have links back to your site, which once again reinforces the fact that you are the authority, the point of truth. So that is going to help your original article rank better on your site. I hope that answers it. Not as simple as just saying yes or no, but hopefully that clarifies.
Yeah, and I think that the whole, whether it's just duplicate content doesn't help you or hurt you, this is a kind of a moving target over the years. And generally, yes, it's not going to cover the first one to present, and that's what we want to handle. But anything Google looks at as deceptive, if they're assuming it's deceptive, that's a whole different issue. So at the end of the day, whether it's not going to help or outright hurt you, these kinds of things, we just recommend following best practices. You can avoid all of this if you follow best practices and you understand the implications of everything you do. So for example, just began putting our content out on LinkedIn, because LinkedIn has changed a lot over the years. And we'll make sure we publish our content on our blog first. We don't want our content showing up on LinkedIn, a property we don't control. We'll publish it on our blog. A week or two later, we'll publish it on LinkedIn. Those are the kinds of things you want to think through very carefully. Another question we had about, how do you identify if your agency is using black hack techniques or strategies? Great question.
Yeah. Well, first off, have us take a quick look. that always helps. We can let you know. But generally, it's going to be in your link profile. So we talked about quality of links. So certainly it's easy to identify that using some tools out there, Ahrefs or Majestic, to look at your link graph, or SEMrush if you're using those guys. You can look at that and you can see toxicity of links. You can also see velocity. So if it's grown really quickly, generally that's a signal, unless there was a particular event of why you would gain those many links quickly. So that's something that you can see, quality of links. The other thing is, you know, black hat, there's a lot of on-site factors for black hat, keyword stuffing, things like that, that you can see. That's a lot easier and a lot easier for Google to ignore. The main thing is, if you're seeing your site drop in the rankings, that's the outcome of either not following best practices or following bad practices. So the outcome generally is what we look at, and then we'll backtrack kind of forensically to see why that might be, whether a particular page had a whole load of links, bad links thrown at it, or links that were low value, or just if that particular page has any kind of signals that might look like it's trying to spam Google. So there can be internal link signals as well. You know, I've seen sites, large sites that have anchor text back to their homepage that, that mentions their keyword, you know. So you have something that says like psychology that goes back to their homepage. It's an internal link from every single page of the anchor text. That's silly. That might not hurt your site. It's definitely not helping. And Google might see that as a negative signal. So having a quick look at that, but certainly start with the link profile.
Yeah, I was just going to say that, granted, I don't know if you remember this one, we recently worked with a reproductive practice in San Diego with multiple locations. And first thing we saw was evidence of all kinds of black hat. So they were unwittingly paying within minutes, like, okay, there's these links are suspect, the way this is structured, this is suspect. So, you know, without doing a full audit, oftentimes we can see, we can sniff it pretty quickly. So that's, it does happen. It's not every day, but it definitely happens on a pretty regular basis. We'll see that. And, you know, one of the challenges is, I think that some practice, some businesses and SEO can be very littered with, you know, good and bad. It's really sadly all across the board. There's a whole lot of bad, either unethical or incompetent or both players in the SEO field, sadly. And the we see these kinds of things, and sometimes they could be even one that's trying to be more legitimate, but if they don't have the respect of the or the relationship, they, you know, their clients keep saying we want to be on number one, so they just go desperate and start trying things. That's going to be in trouble. You have to look at this in long term. This is not something that you really want to have to mess around with, because it's, you know, once you get in trouble, it's really hard to dig out of the hole. So I'm going to wrap up there. You guys have been great. We've had lots of great questions and some nice compliments in the chat here. So we definitely appreciate that. We will be doing more of these. Today, you know, we talked about some really advanced ones. And I told Grant when we were talking about it offline that we wanted to start with one that gave covered a lot of ground, that gave context to really understand this. And this is deep as a lot of people need to go or want to go. But each of these categories can be talked about in far more detail. So we appreciate your time today. And thank you very much for attending.
Thank you.